Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Rantoul Press for the week of July 31st. We'll start as usual with some local news. National Coloring Day to be observed at library. From Rantoul. National Coloring Book Day will be Friday, August 2nd, and Rantoul Public Library will observe the day. All ages are welcome to come and celebrate coloring from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. that day at an open house. People can drop by at their convenience. Supplies will be provided for all who want to try coloring. Rantoul Public Library is located at 103 West Flessner Avenue. Call 217-893-3955 with questions. Work starts on new Rantoul multipurpose courts. Rick Judge pointed a temperature gauge at the surface of the Wabash Park courts next to J.W. Eater Junior High School. The temperature was almost there, almost to the necessary 135 degrees to progress with the next phase of the installation work, installing the rest of the fabric seam. The new Rantoul Park District courts will include two combination tennis volleyball courts and four pickleball courts. Judge said there have been a number of pickleball players who have stopped by to check on the status of the work. Read more about the courts in the August 7th edition of the Rantoul Press. Staff leaving RCS district causes concern. A discussion that was rather heated took place during last Thursday night's Rantoul Schools Board meeting. Board members Andy Graham and Kevin McAllister brought up concerns about faculty leaving the school district, more specifically ones that have lived in Rantoul their entire life. Board Vice President Sandra Ulott took exception to some of the questions that were directed towards Superintendent Michelle Ramage. After a few moments of heated discussion, the board was able to move on and move forward with what was otherwise a quiet meeting. Resident Jack Anderson spoke during the public forum portion of the meeting, stating his concern about the board packet not being available to the public. Anderson said he feels the public is intimidated due to their lack of knowledge of what the board is going to discuss at the meetings. Anderson went on to say, "If you don't say what is in the board packet, we don't know it exists." The board also introduced Annie Smith as new assistant principal at Northview Elementary. The board approved a memorandum of understanding for hard-to-fill position salary increase and hard-to-fill position stipend. The board also approved a contract with American Lutheran Church Food Service. The next scheduled meeting will take place Thursday, August 15th, in the Robert D. Little Boardroom. Rantoul man charged with armed robbery. A Rantoul man who allegedly took part in mugging a man in that village July 24th is being held in the county jail. William Marshall Jr., 22, who listed an address in the 1500 block of Hobson Drive, was expected to be formally charged July 29th with armed robbery with a baseball bat following his arrest Thursday night by Rantoul police. Sergeant Rodney Sullivan said police are also looking for other men they believe were involved in the attack. Sullivan said that at about 6:50 p.m. July 24th, the 30-year-old victim went to the Gulfview Village apartment complex, intending to pick up other men he knew and give them a ride. He reported that when he arrived in the 700 block of Willow Pond, he was beaten and robbed of his keys, money, and phone by men using their hands, fists, and a baseball bat. Sullivan said preliminary investigation revealed the men believed the victim had money and that they dragged him from his car to an apartment trying to get it. He was able to get away from them and get to another apartment where police were summoned. He was taken Wednesday night, where he was treated for cuts that required stitches and bruises. Sullivan said Marshall was in an apartment on Willow Pond that police searched that night with a court order. He was arrested the following day after the victim identified him as one of the robbers. Judge Tom DeFana set bond for Marshall at $100,000. Pyatt Farmer faces trial for allegedly defrauding Gifford First Security Banks. A Pyatt County farmer is slated to be tried in federal court in November after he was cited by a federal grand jury last month on charges of bank fraud and concealment of bankruptcy assets. During a court appearance Tuesday in Urbana, Chief U.S. District Judge Sarah Darrow set a November 18th trial date for James R. Williams, 59, of Cisco. According to the indictment, Williams allegedly defrauded both Gifford State Bank and First Security Bank by submitting false information on a balance sheet he used to get a $4.5 million loan for his business, RJW Williams Farms, Incorporated. Court records said losses to the banks totaled more than $500,000. The indictment also alleged that Williams concealed more than $500,000 in grain sales from creditors of the bankruptcy estate of RJW Williams Farms, Incorporated. Williams allegedly instructed employees of a Niantic-based ADM grain elevator to issue checks to his son, which were then deposited into an account held jointly by Williams and his son. The case is being prosecuted by Assistant U.S. Attorney Meredith Ryder. The charges were investigated by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, Office of Inspector General, in collaboration with the Central Illinois Bankruptcy Fraud Working Group. If convicted of bank fraud, Williams faces up to 30 years in prison and a fine of up to $1 million. If convicted of concealing his assets, he faces up to 5 years in prison and a fine of up to $250,000. Williams remains released on bond. Motorist suffers life-threatening injuries in wreck near Gifford. A Mount Vernon resident was transported to an area hospital with life-threatening injuries following a single vehicle wreck near Gifford Thursday morning. An Illinois State Police report said Tavon J. Galladay, 28, was eastbound in a 2003 Mitsubishi on U.S. 136 near Champaign County 2500 East, about 2 miles east of Gifford. Galladay ran off the road to the right, overcorrected to the left, lost control and began to spin. The vehicle overturned on the road. The vehicle rolled off the road to the left, struck a ditch, and then a wooden pole. The accident happened at 11:08 a.m. Galladay faces charges of no valid driver's license, operating an uninsured vehicle, and improper lane usage. A Champaign man facing charges after being found in car stolen from Rantoul woman. Bond has been set at $75,000 for a Champaign man allegedly found in a vehicle stolen in Rantoul. Antoine Bernard Doris, 41, who listed an address in the 1400 block of West Bradley Avenue, Champaign, was charged Tuesday with felony receiving or possessing a stolen vehicle. He is due back in court August 6th. According to a police report, at 6:28 a.m. Monday, officers stopped a vehicle in the 1200 block of North Walnut Street in Champaign after they identified it as stolen. Police arrested the driver, identified as Doris, for possessing the stolen vehicle and driving while his license was revoked. The report said the vehicle had been stolen from a 53-year-old Rantoul woman. And now a feature story. Small town values. Population 99. Foosland, a town where residents stick together. If you're not a Foos, from Foosland, or related to one, then you've never likely been through the smallest incorporated town in Champaign County. No one just drives through Foosland because it's not on the way to anywhere, said Connie Aldrich, who became a Foos by longevity rather than birth. I didn't grow up here, but I'm a Foos in my mind. After moving to this tiny town of 99 in the northwest corner of the county in the early 1970s, Aldrich knows as well as the natives that Foosland is off the beaten path. A railroad runs through it, a creek nearby it. But three local highways, Illinois 47, Illinois 54, and U.S. 136, take local traffic on the way to anywhere through other small towns, like Gibson City and Fisher, all missing Foosland by a handful of miles. Oddly, the highways form a triangle around this quiet four-block-by-four-block burg that covers less than half a square mile and doesn't even have a water tower signaling its location. Its 40 households rely on well water. I like it because it's peaceful and nobody bothers you, said Dale Aldrich, Connie's husband, a native Fooslander, current village trustee, and former mayor, who's called this home for all of his 70-plus years. Occasionally, someone will wander from a main highway into Foosland. They're either lost or curious, the locals joke. In a town where everyone knows everyone, at least by name and by vehicle, it doesn't take long for a visitor to get noticed. But Fooslanders are not recluses, assures Larry Butch Johnson, in the 50s and 60s, along with Dale Aldrich. Everybody's friendly and everybody's welcoming in Foosland, Johnson said. In their generation, Foosland's population was closer to 150 and had a decent number of businesses, including the general store and gas station, banks, and a car dealer. It incorporated in 1959 to capture tax revenue and upgrade the town's streets. But even then, the town's more thriving horse and buggy days, with closer to 300 residents and a dozen local businesses, were already in the past. This was a thriving community way back, Dale Aldrich said. In his youth, McKinney Motors actually drew out of towners from all over U.S. to Foosland because it was a Willys Jeep dealer and the place to get parts for various models. In that era, Johnson said, kids in Foosland made their own fun, walking everywhere, playing in mud, drinking from the garden hose and entertaining themselves, depending on the season, baseball, fishing, and creek swimming in summer, and basketball in the gym, and skating and hockey on the frozen creek in winter with sticks made from hedge trees. What you have to do to envision Foosland is envision a Norman Rockwell painting, Johnson said, of growing up in the small town in his era, a time when he and his friends had 40 mothers in town, keeping them in line. The 72-year-old appreciated that when he joined the Marines after high school and went off to Vietnam, where mail was very important. I was very fortunate because I had several mothers who wrote me, Johnson said, his voice breaking with emotion. You can take the kid out of Foosland, but you can't take Foosland out of the kid. William Foos was here. In the mid-1800s, the Foosland area was undeveloped swampy prairie, until a successful Ohio farmer and banker named William Foos bought about 3,500 acres in northwestern Champaign County from Civil War veterans, who reportedly received it for their service. He drained the land through 15 miles of open ditch and several thousand dollars of tile drains, the story goes, and launched a large tenant farming operation overseen by a local superintendent. In 1880, according to a biography, Foos sold 200 head of cattle at 5 cents, with an average weight of 1,747 pounds, and cultivated 1,500 acres in addition to meadows and pastures for livestock, putting up over 500 tons of hay. His land was known in that vicinity as the Model Farm. But Foos never became a Foos. He, and later his son, managed their large tenant farming operation from Ohio, visiting Foosland occasionally to check in with the superintendent who ran Foos Estates, as it was known. Still, Foos is entirely responsible for the town's existence. Around 1870, Chicago-Paducah Railroad officials approached him about acquiring right-of-way for a line that later became the Wabash Railroad. During negotiations, Foos brokered a railroad station on his property and began laying out Foosland, established in 1874. The train station came 11 years later. There's not a train station left, but about 5 trains still roll through the town every day. And today's Village Park is the same piece of land Foos donated and dedicated as a park more than a century ago, said Dale Aldrich, who explained that over time the Foos Estates land has slowly exchanged hands, the last chunk still held by family descendants sold only recently. In Dinner at Noon, Supper at Night, a book about growing up on a Foosland farm in the 20s and 30s, native Foos Verla Bullard wrote that the town owed its prosperity to its rich black loam soil. Benches of Wisdom. The area still boasts that fertile land, dominated by farming, but rural life has changed a lot since the 50s and 60s when Johnson and Dale Aldrich remember farmers gathering every morning at the downtown grain elevator office, or dressing up in their white shirts and overalls to come into town on Saturday nights to stock up at the general store and visit. In her book, Bullard recalled benches of wisdom in front of the general store, where farmers and townspeople gathered to discuss about any topic. Men who normally occupied the benches do not gossip, they visit, she wrote. The farmers made Foosland, said Johnson, giving them credit for supporting businesses as well as the town's main church, its only congregation for decades, with their membership and donations to Foosland United Methodist. Foosland's always been a pretty religious town, Johnson said, reminiscing with Dale Aldrich about the church bell ringing every Sunday. And without a school in town, the Methodist Church was the center of the community, said Connie Aldrich. Foosland High closed in 1947 when the Gibson City School District was formed, and 20 years later the grade school followed. Today, Foosland kids are bused to Gibson City Melvin Sibley schools. In the last 4 decades, farms outside town have consolidated, Businesses have closed and young people have left for the military, college, or jobs. The population has slipped from 172 in 1970 to 132 in 90, and in the last decade dipped below the century mark from 101 to 99, according to the latest U.S. Census Bureau estimates. More recently, the town lost its grain elevator business, its polling place, and its fire department. The latter consolidated with Fisher, where Fooslanders now vote, too. The U.S. Post Office, present since the decade Foosland was established, is still hanging on, but is open only 2 hours a day. It will go eventually, but hopefully not for a while, Dale Aldrich said. When we lost our grade school, that hurt us. We'll lose all of our identity if we lose our post office. In 2008, the Methodist Church held its last service. The building was put up for auction, purchased for its stained glass windows, and demolished. In her book, Buller described the windows as massive, beautiful beyond description, and the most outstanding feature about the building. The 398-pound, 27-inch church bell was relocated to Mount Hope Cemetery, northeast of town, the site of the original Methodist congregation. And the Foosland Fire Station was also sold, converted into a residence, leaving the village board without a meeting place. Five mayors in 60 years. With a little money and a lot of volunteer labor, the town's rock floor pole shed was converted into the current community center and board meeting room. That's where current mayor Doug Walker was sworn into office in May, just the fifth mayor in 60 years. In a town of 99, it doesn't take many votes to win. Walker said there were 32 registered voters in the April election, and of the 17 who went to the polls, he garnered 100% of the vote. The budget was very minimal, he joked about financing his campaign. No signs or billboards. But he said he did make more of an effort than usual to wave at people in town, pull over and talk with them or visit with residents at the post office, especially those who may not know him as well. It's just letting people know who you are, said Walker, which is partly why he and his family moved to the tiny town 14 years ago. It's a very relaxed atmosphere. The kids can bike around town and everybody knows everybody, he said. You know whose kids belong where and when they're biking around. And crime, he said, is non-existent. But the trade-off is that everyone needs to pitch in because local government officials are basically volunteers, too, who are typically recruited into service. Walker said a previous mayor asked him to run for the village board 6 years ago. Being mayor is more a labor of love, Walker said. It's hardly a lucrative, power-wielding position with no village employees, no village services, and very little revenue. Foosland gets a tiny share of state gas tax, $2,500 to $3,000 a year, and sales tax revenue, about $20,000 a year. According to Connie Aldrich, the village treasurer who was asked to run for village board by a previous mayor, Paul Verkler, in 1987. She was appointed treasurer shortly after that, and except for a two-year hiatus, she's held that role ever since. Like a lot of small towns, money is the village's biggest challenge, said Dale Aldrich. When something needs to be done, Deborah Field said, Fooslanders pitch in. Like when strong winds sent power poles and trees on nearly every property tumbling a week ago. That Sunday, neighbors were helping neighbors all over town, she said, and calling on friends and relatives from out of town, especially those with chainsaws. Chainsaws were running everywhere, said Lynn Meese, a longtime resident and village trustee, whose husband Harold is a native. Walker said it made for a working Father's Day, but the community came together. We all pitched in, he said. It makes everything go a lot easier. Much of the debris was piled on the Meese property, where residents are allowed to put material that's disposed of regularly. The next day, another resident, Dave Adamson, was pitching in on his tractor pushing the pile together. Said Field, that's just how everybody is in this town. A pretty cool town. 4 years ago, Blake and Jamie Probst were renting in Champaign-Urbana. Compared to most areas of Champaign County, Jamie said they found a very affordable house, especially for its size, across from Fooslands Park. With a 7-year-old daughter and a baby on the way, Jamie Probst said she and her husband don't mind their commute to work in CU and wanted their kids to attend GCMS schools. A stay-at-home mom, whom the Probsts have become friends with, gets her daughter off the bus and keeps her until they get off work, and the Aldriches are their friendly backyard neighbors, Probst said. An affordable house near a friend, already living in Foosland, also attracted Brian and Deborah Field to town 17 years ago, when they moved their family from Fort Myers, Florida, and transferred to local jobs with their trucking company. A Kentucky native accustomed to a rolling, tree-filled landscape, Deborah Field remembers her reaction to the flat, tree-barren farmland. "I thought, oh no, what did he do to me? It's nothing but cornfields," she said, adding that it was a big change from Fort Myers, especially having to drive several miles to get gas or groceries. "But I wouldn't have changed it." Brian Field said he had to adjust to how everyone you pass on the road throws up their hand, whether they know you or not. "Which took some getting used to," he said. 17 years later, the Fields are like native Fooslanders, involved with the village board and community activities, and loving small-town life where they know most of their neighbors. The Fields and their now-grown children have also been integral in helping the community revive a scaled-down version of Foosland Days, a festival popular in the 1980s. "It's quiet. People keep to themselves," Deborah said. "Despite the peace and quiet, there's no anonymity in a town of 99. Connie Aldridge said it's typical for current and former residents who are visiting to take the drive around town to see what's going on, if anything has changed, or if anyone's outside visiting. "We do, and most do. Just a quick check on the village and neighbors," she said. Lynn Mee said it's a nice little town where no one bothers anyone, and you can kick back and relax. "I don't know how much we sit on the front porch and watch the world go by," she said. But Jamie Prope said she gets a recurring question now from out-of-towners. "What is Foosland?" "It's a town," she said, she tells them. "It's actually a pretty cool town." We'll turn now to the death notices for the week. Deborah Louise Debbie Foster, 69, of Paxton, passed away Saturday, July 27th at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Funeral services were held July 31st at Bayer Family Funeral Services, Paxton. A private family committal service will be held at a later date at Glen Cemetery, Paxton. Memorials may be made to the Vasculitis Foundation or the Vineyard Church, Urbana. Condolences may be offered at BayerFuneralServices.com. Jess Lernis Burwell, 85, of Paxton, formerly of Urbana, passed away Saturday, June 15th at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton Senior Living. A memorial visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday, August 3rd at Renner Wyckoff Chapel in Urbana. Memorial contributions may be made in Jess's honor to the American Heart Association. Condolences may be offered at renner-wyckoffchapel.com. Eldon R. Anderson, 82, of Paxton, passed away Thursday, July 25th at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton on Pells. Memorials may be made to the Evangelical Covenant Church, Paxton, or an organization of the donor's choice. Condolences may be offered at bearfuneralservices.com. Linda McGuire, 77, of Champaign, died Saturday, July 27th at Country Health Gifford. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Owens Funeral Home, Champaign. Elsie M. McCubbins, 72, of Thomasboro, died peacefully in her sleep in the early morning hours Thursday, July 25th at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center, Urbana. A funeral service was held Wednesday, July 31st at Lux Memorial Chapel, Rantoul. Her ashes will be buried with family in Grafton at a later date. John M. Mel Johnson, age 90, of Champaign, peacefully passed away July 27th at his home. Funeral services were held August 1st at the American Lutheran Church in Rantoul. Burial followed at Eden Park Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the American Lutheran Church, Rantoul, or the Eden Park Cemetery, Rantoul. Service arrangements have been entrusted to Lux Memorial Chapel, Rantoul. Daniel Berner, 42, of Oakwood, formerly of Paxton, died July 27th in Marion. A celebration of life service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, August 3rd, at First United Methodist Church, Danville. Burial will be in All Hands Cemetery at a later date. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday at the church. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, Danville, is in charge of arrangements. In lieu of flowers, the family asked memorial donations be made in his name to Cunningham Children's Home, New Horizon United Methodist Church, care of David Smith, for Africa Outreach Ministry, or the Forest Preserve Friends Foundation, where they are doing restorations to Middle Fork campsites and lake areas. Memories, photos, and videos may be posted on his tribute wall at sunsetfuneralhome.com. Stanley Blacker, Sr., 60, of Paxton, formerly of Urbana, died Monday, July 29th at Accolade Nursing Home, Paxton. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Renner Wyckoff Chapel and Crematory, Urbana. This concludes the reading of the death notices for the week. Now we'll return and finish with local news or opinions. From Kenny Chumley, Rantoul Press columnist. Follow your own creativity dreams, whatever they are. When folks find out I've done some writing, it often happens that someone will mention how much they'd like to be an author. Rarely have they actually written anything. Usually they're only relating a dream. I always urge them to follow through on their dreams, for few things are more exhilarating, to me, than the creativity involved in writing. Creativity, wrote Howard Hendricks, is like a verbal bombshell that explodes shrapnel into the private wish list of most people. It's commonly thought that creativity is given to only a few artistic achievers who were born with a touch of genius, but for the rest of us is beyond our reach. Hogwash. The book of Genesis says, first, that in the beginning, God created, and second, that God created man in his own image. The only thing attributed to God's prior to man's creation is that he created. And since there is in every individual something that is essentially divine, it seems logical to believe that every man, humanity, male and female, has some creative ability. And every man gives evidence of this, daily in 100 ways. People display their creative potential. Of all the creatures God made during the days of creation, only one had the ability to produce surprises. Only one was given free will to think voluntarily and independently. All other life is subject to the laws of instinct and nature and is totally predictable. Learn the nature of any particular animal in a given environment, and you can anticipate the normal and probable behavior of the animal. But you can't predict when it comes to man, because humanity stands alone in the image of the Maker, totally free in regard to decision-making. Only human beings are capable of improbability, of independent decisions, and of behavior beyond ordinary expectations. The reason kids don't have to be taught to be creative is that creativity is essential for human survival. Virtually every other species in the animal kingdom is born with a fully formed repertoire of reflexes and responses. Not so the human. We alone must learn and master from scratch almost everything we need to know to survive. When it comes to expressing creativity by writing a script or screenplay, a twofold pleasure is involved. There's the joy that results from your own creativity, and then there's the joy that comes from seeing an actor or actress bring your work to life. If you've ever thought about writing, painting, building, composing, etc., let me prod you to follow through on your dream. This has been Tamara reading the Rantoul Press. I hope to read with you again soon.